Welcome to our village board meeting. It's Tuesday, not our regular one, but it's Tuesday, May 29th. It's a little after 7 o'clock. If I can ask the clerk to please take the roll call.
Trustee Corsini.
Here.
Trustee Karci.
Here.
Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee Conti. Trustee Hennig.
Here.
Trustee Gibbs.
Here.
President Odusi.
I'm here. If I can ask everyone to please stand to say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Any comment? Maureen, it's the only comment. So, if you wouldn't mind, we can wait until we get to that portion. It'll be fast. It won't be too long. Thanks. Sure. No. Go ahead.
Sorry.
Is it on a particular subject?
It's as to Ms. Houston's.
Okay. Just want to double check. Don't want to assume. Okay. So we'll leave those two sign-ins for later. Okay, with that, I will go to item 4, which is the elected official comments and announcements. Maybe we'll start with Trustee Gibbs this time.
Good evening, everybody. As per usual, I was quite proud of our village yesterday in our Memorial Day activities. Eric and staff, Public Works, everybody upstairs did a fine job with preparing from a village point of view, but it takes a special neighborhood to do what we do on Memorial Day, and it pleases me every year that not only do we do the fun, throw things in the parade thing, but the whole honoring the purpose of Memorial Day. I think River Forest does a fine job, so that's it.
Okay, thank you.
I just want to echo, yesterday was a great day. I especially enjoyed meeting all the family members of the staff. I think that was very cool for them to come out and obviously show their support for what you do, for your work, so that was very nice. That's it. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Clerk?
Nothing for me.
Kudos and ditto with what my previous trustees have said. Again, a nice job, and congratulations to all the village staff for who find our organization in putting that parade together. So thank you.
What everyone else has already said.
Yes, and Carmel?
Same, great, always a great day. The weather cooperated. It wasn't as bad because the clouds kind of held the breeze in, so that was good. I also want to thank the volunteers that took the time to help with traffic management. The Citizens Corps folks that volunteered were great to see out there, and just everybody's smiling faces, and the swag was awesome. Once again, Eric, you did a great job with that. And then I see Jan Sager in our audience. I just wanted to announced that she has been working with District 90 to get the school building designated as have an honorific plaque put on there, and so she's worked with the Oak Park River Forest Historical Society, and correct me if I'm wrong, but so they're going to get a plaque signifying the historic designation of the school building. So she worked with Anthony Cozy, and so thank you for working on that, and hopefully they're going to design a plaque that more residents and other places of historical significance in town can hopefully participate in that program. So
awesome.
I just wanted to shout out to her. Thank you.
Thanks, Jan. That's all?
That's it.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Well, I have a few items. I just want to echo with what all my colleagues have said about the Memorial Day Parade. What a hit. It was great. It was over the top, great. Like Carmela said, the weather was perfect, and as Patty and Mike had said, just meeting the family members of our staff, it was a joy. So thank you to all of you and for all the work that you do day in and day out on behalf of the residents of River Forest. It's we can't thank you enough. So I was busy these last 2 weeks. I started writing down all the things I attended. First and foremost, Eric and I attended a meeting with Mayor Calderon and Mayor Abu Talib from Oak Park regarding the Tiger Grant that we got rejected on for the third time for the viaduct. And we kind of strategized a little bit about what we could do in regards to going after the Tiger Grant, doing a Tiger Grant again. I mean, there are additional funds in this last federal budget. Actually, the money supposedly tripled regarding money available. So I know that Eric and Tim and Kara are all gonna, I guess, put, we didn't really have minutes from that. We should probably produce some minutes of that meeting, and so we can at least share with the board and their boards what we strategized on and some of the things that we're thinking. But we're not letting it go. It's a public safety issue. Clearly, I've walked it, I've bike ride. It's just terrible. I mean, you can't, I don't know, it's not ADA compliant. It's just it's a safety issue. We need to all work together to fix it. And I know Forest Park and Oak Park are committed to it, as well as River Forest. Second, I also attended a meeting with Ralph Martiri from D90 and Ed Condon regarding the IGA, which we'll discuss later on in, today, tonight. I also attended the Forest Bank 75-year celebration that they had. It was kind of cool. They re-logoed their name, and it's really, they've done a great job with their lobby as well. I also attended the Wednesday Journal conversation featuring Jeff Morrow, our very own. Thank you to Wednesday Journal and others who sponsored Jeff. He's got a great story. I'm hoping and begging him to open up something in River Forest, since he is a resident, a longtime resident, as well as his family. So congratulations to Jeff and the Wednesday Journal. I also attended with Russ and Patty the Chamber Luncheon, which was really a great luncheon. It was featuring developers and other real estate personnel talking about primarily Oak Park development, but they also, I think, related a lot of the development to River Forest as well. So the good news is the market is changing. I guess that's what I got out of it. I also got out of it the construction and development is costly, and therefore many things affect, you know, because it's costly, many things are affected by that, such as density and other things. So as we start thinking about development, many of these things that these people talked about on the panel, I think, will come to fruition. Let's see. And then last, I'll say I also attended today Roosevelt 8th grade solar presentation that at Eric Simon's house. I don't know if you know this, but we have 6 residents in River Forest that actually use solar panels on the roofs. It's pretty cool. And we're also, I also learned today that Illinois is the number one maker of nuclear energy. Didn't know that either. And we're 33rd in sustainable clean energy as well. So we're inching our way up. I know it sounds like Illinois made a commitment to solar energy, clean energy, and it sounds like we're going to see more and more of that type of probably you know, work in our homes. And then last, I encourage our residents to, again, go on protectmytown.com, because right now the legislature is continuing to look at their budget, and part of their budget is certainly looking at every piece of revenue, and we are doing everything we can to ensure that our local government distribution fund doesn't get touched. But it looks like, I just sent that all to you as well, it looks like it might get reduced by 5%. So we'll see in the next couple, 48 hours, if that comes to fruition. But please go on to protectmytown.com and tell your legislature to keep our revenues in our local town. That's all I have.
.us.
Thank you. Protectmytown.us. Okay, thank you, Eric. I don't want it to get confused. That's all I have, so we'll go ahead and move on to the consent agenda, item 5. If I can get a motion to approve consent A through F.
I move to approve the consent agenda items A through F as presented.
Second.
Okay. I'll ask the clerk to please read through the consent agenda.
Can I just ask one quick question?
Yeah.
On the increased costs to the Chicago resurfacing and requesting more funds, what's the likelihood, I mean, that those are going to be available?
Well, what,
am I understanding that correctly?
Yes, correct. So it's near 100%. So we're just waiting on final confirmation from the, where's John, from the council of mayors. Part of this was there was another project in another community that was under budget.
Okay.
We were a little over budget, so they were able to balance that out. But IDOT's rules are a little peculiar in that we have to make sure, we have to approve it before they'll even release anything to us, concur with
the bid. Right.
So we had to work kind of with the council mayors to make sure that money was available before we said yes.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Clerk.
A, regular village board meeting minutes, May 14th, 2018. B, executive session meeting minutes, May 14th, 2018. C, authorized letter of concurrence to IDOT for award of a contract for the Chicago Avenue resurfacing project. D, waive formal bid and award contract for the 2018 alley improvement project, design engineering to Hancock Engineering in an amount not to exceed $40,560. E, April accounts payable $1,549,651.39. F, village administrator's report.
Okay, very good. If I can please have the vote.
Trustee Corsini.
Yes.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs.
Yes.
Okay. Moving on to six. These are items for separate consideration. So the first one, we'll do them in two separate
If it pleases the board, I'll withdraw from discussion and vote of 6A.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. So if I can get a motion to approve 6A and a second.
I'll move to approve payments to Anderson Elevator in the amount of $1,049.00.
Second.
Okay, very good. If we can ask the clerk to read that, and then we'll go ahead and vote on that.
A, motion to approve payments to Anderson Elevator in the amount of
$1,000.
Let me start from the beginning. We're going to start that again. A, motion to approve payments to Anderson Elevator in the amount of $1,049.
Okay. If we could take the vote, please. And calling Trustee Gibbs' name.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee Corsini.
Yes.
Okay. And then if I can get a motion for 6B.
I move to approve the April 2018 accounts payable transactions for the Economic Development Fund totaling $40, for the TIF Madison Street Fund totaling $328,988, and for the TIF North Avenue Fund totaling $4,983.
Second.
Okay, very good.
And I'm recusing myself since my law firm represents both District 90 and District 200, and I ask the clerk not to call my name during the vote, please.
Okay. Okay, if I can have the clerk read it.
You want me to read it?
Yes.
B, motion to approve the April 2018 accounts payable transactions for the Economic Development Fund totaling $40, for the TIF Madison Street Fund totaling $328,988, and for the TIF North Avenue Fund totaling $4,983.
Okay. Can you take the vote, please?
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs.
Yes.
Trustee Corsini.
Yes.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Okay, great. Now moving on to seven. These are recommendations of boards, commissions, and committees. Our first comes from the Traffic and Safety Commission. If I can have a trustee, please move item 7A in a second, and we'll discuss it.
Make a motion to accept the recommendation from the Traffic and Safety Commission to pass an ordinance to install a two-way stop intersection on Clinton Place at its intersection with Iowa Street.
I'll second.
Okay, very good. So, Eric, do you want to,
This one's pretty self-explanatory. I ran through the Traffic and Safety Commission. I had a request from a resident over in the 900 block of Clinton. So Traffic and Safety reviewed this, recommended and agreed with the petitioner's original request for the two-way stop intersection. Again, that would be at Clinton with its intersection at Iowa. So pretty.
Because normally we get like the whole packet. I don't know. I obviously could have looked up the traffic and safety's agenda. I just didn't think of it.
Oh, you're right. There's none of the supplementary materials. Yeah. No, I apologize for that.
No, it's, but like how many people signed the petition? Because it's just a block from us. And
yeah, let me look it up here.
Yeah, there was like an online petition, and then he vocally expressed, because I listened to the tape and went on to look at the agenda. And interestingly enough, the traffic consultant did not recommend putting this stop sign there.
Because there's not one at Iowa and Monroe, which blocks traffic going east-west. And this would block traffic north-south, right?
Yes.
Actually, my understanding was that the traffic consultant did recommend. There were three criteria that they looked at, and based on two of them, it wouldn't have recommended. But based on the sight lines and using a rate of 30 miles per hour, that would have hindered visibility, and so under that circumstance, okay, they would have recommended the stop sign.
They did have the conversation at the board level there, at the commission level, that they were, that was a curious thing for them, that they, you know, didn't have enough accident information to support it. So, and they had a grander discussion too about, you know, not piecemealing these stop signs and having a more comprehensive discussion about traffic and safety, which I think we've talked about, in which we, you know, sort of went piggybacking on this safe school routes type thing. So I'm glad Jeff Boster, who was there, you know, informed the board and commission that we were doing that. Yeah. So I have no issues with this, other than, you know, I think we do need to start to
more comprehensive.
I mean, Iowa, we've talked about this forever. I mean, that's just kind of a busy throughway street and kids crossing.
I do think it has improved. The traffic has improved since they put the stop sign in Monroe.
I agree.
Because it used to be a straight shot from Lathrop all the way down.
Right. Yeah, there's about...
and the people coming through town know that.
Right.
They jump off a division and...
But it's the people that don't live in town that don't... that are not following, you know, our...
Yeah, they're the ones that are zooming through.
There's about 44.
It was weird, right.
Are they neighbors, or is it? Because what worries me with the online petitions is it's someone that's just signing something for the sake of signing.
It's online. It looks like it's handwritten.
And there's a it's both.
It's a combination.
It's both. It's a combination.
And there were some that don't live in that general area. But
friends
of
Hamlin.
And there were some that work for the company that makes
them. Okay. Any further questions regarding this issue? Okay. So I ask the clerk to please take the vote.
Trustee Gibbs.
Yes.
Trustee Corsini.
Yes.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Okay, so before we move on, I don't want to lose what Carmela said, Trustee Corsini said, in terms of a bigger plan. Have we discussed that with the traffic and safety, Eric?
No, I think that I envision that being one of the recommendations and action items that come out of the comprehensive plan.
Okay. So I guess we'll have to look at it.
Yeah. Because they didn't really, you know, they knew that it was something that they wanted to look at. They didn't really know how to approach it. And then Jeff said between the plan, you know, the comprehensive plan and the safe routes, you know, it is something that's on our radar. And at some point we'll be discussing that
with them. And, or at least updating them?
Okay,
super.
So I think that was one of their concerns and something they've been talking about. So I'm glad that that came, that was part of their conversation.
Okay, very good. All right, so next up is the Zoning Board of Appeals. This is the variation for the setback for the detached garage. I'm going to ask a Board of Trustees to make a motion and then second it, and then we can go ahead and discuss it.
I'll make a motion to pass an ordinance granting the requested variation to sections 10-9-7, parentheses C, of the zoning ordinance at 631 Edgewood Place.
Here a second?
I'll second.
Okay, great. All right, Maureen, if you can take the podium, and then I'll ask Kevin. Kevin.
Hello again. Hello. My name is Maureen Houston, 631 Edgewood. And I've been trying to get a permit for this garage for several months. I don't have any new information to add. I'm still requesting approval for the D1 drawing. You actually maybe have two D1 drawings. Mr. Horan sort of revised the D1 drawing and didn't rename it, but it was the one that you would have received, I think, in March, the last time I was here. I don't really have anything to add. I'm happy to answer any questions. I'm honestly a little mystified about what I'm supposed to do now. Zoning denied my request again, but did not give me any rationale or explanation or idea of what I would need to do to revise my application to get approval. The one, not at the most recent meeting, but the meeting before, their recommendation was to build a garage without a variation. The problem is it is not possible.
Right.
It's not a matter of preference. It is not possible. So I'm really at a loss about how to proceed,
yep.
And that's why I'm here again requesting
yes,
approval of this variation.
So let me explain a little bit, Maureen, and first of all, thank you for being here. The ultimate responsibility for this lies with this Board of Trustees, and therefore the Zoning Board or Development Review Board, they're recommenders to our organization. They looked at it the first time and they denied it. That you came back to us and explained that you didn't know you had an option to present D1. That made complete reasonable sense to all of us around the table. At least that was the will of the board, is to have you remand this back to the Zoning Board, look at the D1 drawing. I also listened to the Zoning Board audio, and I agree there was no direction. So tonight, what's on, what we're going to either deny or accept is the D1 drawing that was before us. Now, I'm a bit confused about the second D1 drawing.
Yeah,
what is that
drawing
second?
Drawing is the operative drawing.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not in your packet. I submitted with a letter to the Zoning Board.
Hang on, Kevin. Sorry. So why don't I then let you come on up to the podium and state your name. And so for the, come on up, Kevin, I think. Yeah. So this is the appropriate time for you to tell us what this second D1 is.
Can I sit down?
Yeah, sure, Maureen. Just to finish up, so tonight we're going to either accept the zoning or or deny the vote.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
It's
to clarify. The revised D1.
So if you could
just. My name is Kevin Horan. Okay. I live at 623 Edgewood. I was here at the last meeting of the Board of Trustees, and I've been into the Zoning Board as well. Just to clarify, the revised D1, I had submitted a letter to the Zoning Board at their last meeting where they took under consideration this board's recommendation for D1. And I submitted a letter just reiterating my objection and noting for the Zoning Board that I'm aware that any garage that will be built will require a variation, and reiterated my position that the further that garage is moved back towards the buildable rear third of the property, the less variation is required. And that's, I think, what I had been saying to the Zoning Board the last three times that we were there. And I'll yield to Ms. Houston. I just wanted to clarify that.
So just so we're clear, Kevin, that never came to our board.
Looked at the packet online that was submitted to the trustees.
So just to clear up, so for your application tonight, we are going to be looking at what Maureen has provided, both the Zoning Board and the Board of Trustees. That's all the information and data that we have. So that's what we'll be looking at, is the D1 or any variation of that we discuss as a board.
Certainly.
Is there anything else you want to add to?
I would. I didn't want to step on Ms. Houston's toes in terms of what she wanted to say. Do you want to?
Right.
Oh, okay.
Well, can I just to confirm? So
certainly.
The operative plan is the one dated what looks like April 11th, 2018 at 11:32:50?
Yeah, I believe so.
That's Ms. Houston's.
Okay, but that's what we're voting on, right?
That's what we're voting on.
He revised the drawing on that one and didn't rename it, and so the Zoning Board was confused because they were looking at two D1 drawings and they didn't know which one I had.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure why that happened.
But the altered version isn't even in our packet, so we have never even seen that.
Didn't get
no.
It then.
Okay.
So we're only looking at what you provided. Right. Okay.
So again, I'll be brief. My concerns with the garage as located are well documented. I have a safety issue with the fact that there's a structure that's fairly large, that close to the property line and the driveway. I have two young kids. There's a sight line to the street. People come around that corner. It's a blind corner pretty fast. So that's my legitimate concern in terms of just a safety issue for my kids. There's
where
also
where the garage is located. You're saying, so or the driveway is located
where we're at. The plan, the original plan that was submitted to zoning back in March, and the revised plan that was submitted to zoning based on this board's recommendation earlier this month, both have the garage. The original plan was within a foot. This new plan is within 3 feet. There's a the sum total of the amendment to the plan is 2 feet off the property line, going left to right if you're looking at the plot. So my concern was with a garage that's there, located that far to the front of the lot, cutting off a sight line to and from the street. I'm not concerned about me being able to see oncoming traffic pulling out of my driveway in my car. I'm concerned mostly with my two sons.
And sure, of course, and we are too, but weren't you considering a fence as well?
In the rear portion, yeah.
Not in the...
Up to our gate. This is beyond, will extend beyond the gate. So my... That's my concern. It's also a building density issue. Just in the, by virtue of the fact that it's in the front two-thirds of the property, plainly speaking, we wouldn't have bought the house if there were a garage there in the first place, and it's going to affect our property value. I am not, you know, I've said this before at the last meeting here. I've said it to the zoning board. I really appreciate the work that you guys do. The zoning board took this under consideration now on three separate occasions, and they were very detailed and thorough in their review. I really appreciate it. And what I've said to them, and I think what they've heard, is that if we were to move that garage, or if, I'm sorry, if Miss Houston were to revise her plan to remove the garage, to move the garage further back into the buildable area of the property, I understand it would require a variance, but it wouldn't require as much of a variance as it presently stands. Okay.
You said about the obstruction of view. If I'm reading the plan correctly, there's 31 feet between the sidewalk, it appears, or it could be the street, is between the street and the garage. So
as you go down, we have four shortened driveways.
Yeah,
it's not a traditional lot.
I drove by the house today because I was trying to figure it
okay.
out.
Okay. There's a sight line from my front gate to the street that you can see, you know, very, even if you're a little person, straight through. That's my concern with cars not being able to see little people not being able to see cars.
Right, but it's 31 feet set back. I'm not sure.
I can see the street as I'm coming down where the front portion of the garage will end up being. It will obstruct that. And really, I'm not...
Well, but doesn't the house obstruct that view then, too?
No.
Because house
it'll be next
up.
To...
No, but I mean, the house is closer to the street. Its setback is even less than 31 feet.
21.
Correct, but the garage will be between the house and the and my driveway.
Okay.
All right, so go ahead.
Similar question, but if we go with what you're requesting, how would that make it safer? I mean, we're talking about how much a setback... regarding that variance.
In pushing the garage further back into the buildable. I think if you cut down the tree that's right behind the garage that Miss Houston doesn't want to cut down, that gives you an extra 8 feet.
There's some confusion. Yeah. And the tree in the back, I think, sorry, said, yeah. It's the tree in the front that's right. the issue. And I think the zoning board even talked about not even thinking about pushing it back. So
certainly.
You heard that, right?
I was there. I heard that. It was a misunderstanding on my part as to what the zoning board thought two meetings prior.
Right.
Under this current plan, where they were talking about cutting down a tree, there are no trees going to be cut down. That was what Ms. Houston represented to the board, the zoning board, the last time we were there.
All right. I understand the tree in the back, right? It was something you would consider...
There's two in the front, right?
There's two in front, one in the back.
There's a drainage in here for the last meeting.
Maureen, do you mind setting to... Okay, Kevin, thank you. I just want to get this one cleared up, and then I'm going to explain our process here.
For this back and forth, but to clarify, we brought a drainage engineer to the last meeting, and one of the concerns that Mr. Horan raised at the first meeting was about increasing flooding to his property. And so... The drainage engineer said the worst place in the entire property to put it was where he's proposing, because that is the deepest place, and that we would displace a considerable amount of water, and it would also require that the foundation for the garage would stick up above ground level of 2 to 3 feet, because we have to maintain a certain pitch to the street, and because that is so much lower than the street, it would require a very large elevated foundation. It would just plain look bad, but the bigger reason is because of the flooding and drainage problem.
Yep.
And so
I think that is clearly what the zoning board talked about.
I'll address that. So Mr. Trustee Gibbs is asking about one of the trees in the front.
Right.
And I may remove it, but it would, whether I remove it or not, it has no impact on the location of the garage.
Right. Right.
Whatsoever. There, somehow that got introduced as if I took the tree out, I could move the garage. I could move the garage over, but it creates additional building and safety issues with light and ventilation. Buildings said that they would not like it for fire reasons. So I just wanted to reiterate, you know, Mr. Horan was talking about a large structure so close to the property line. I'm talking about a standard size two-car garage. One story. My lot is 2 to 3 feet lower than his lot, so the impact from that side of the fence would be minimized. Additionally, when he talks about 3 feet and 1 feet, he's talking about the corner of one eave. That it would literally be one point. It's not even the length of the garage, because my house is angled differently, so it would continue to move further from the property line. So this 3 feet and 1 foot, we're referring to the eave, a 2 foot eave. So the building itself, currently, the current plan would be 3 feet to the eave, 5 feet to the garage, which is the standard setback that does not require variation in 95% of the properties in River Forest. So I don't see that as being too close. Your point, Trustee Kargi, about the sight lines, it is true. The garage would be placed at least 10 feet behind the front of my house, and I think, I don't remember, 4 or 6 feet, I think, behind the front face of his house. So the house, my existing house, is a bigger visual obstruction than the garage could possibly be. And then you also, I think, President Ducey raised the issue of the fence. There is a fence there currently, and so that would obstruct the view. It's not as high as a garage, but it obstructs it. And then, you know, again, taking the tree down, not taking the tree down, has no impact on location. I was willing to remove the maple if that's what was required, but everyone who's been there, I think Trustee Gibbs was walking around the backyard, you can see there's just a big depression, and it drops off actually right around where the tree is. So moving it back would create significant additional issues. Not to mention further reduce the permeable land left to address those drainage issues by extending the driveway.
Okay, so I agree, Maureen. So let me, unless there's further comment from Maureen, I want to just clear up what we're voting on, and I want to reiterate what Maureen talked about, because there is some confusion. The driveway and the tree is unrelated at this point in time to the garage variance, okay? We are only talking about the garage variance. And you're right about the closer it gets to your house, the more, you know, fire retardant and other materials that, you know, non-combustible materials that you need. And that's been talked about in the minutes. It's a bit convoluted in the findings of facts. But bottom line, for our trustees, we are talking about the garage structure only. So tree issues, don't consider. I'll tell the board that's not your consideration. Driveways, we shouldn't be considering it. I mean, if you want to make a U-turn into your garage, it's up to you. You might want to reconsider that. But right now we're talking about the garage. And it looks like they had discussion about the garage, and Maureen's right. Cliff is real clear in his notes, on the minutes at least, that, you know, right now it's 6 feet, 4 inches.
Right.
And, you know, that's what D1 is, 6 feet, 4 inches. And so moving it further would then, it would have to include a more fire retardant type of material. So
I have a question on that, though, because they did say you could move it 1 foot closer to the house without having to go through that. Is that correct? Because that seemed to be the conversation.
Well, you could. That's
okay.
Right.
And it would not change the building material.
Well, it would be 5 feet, 4 inches.
But it would not change the building material.
Well, because you're 4 inches.
It's a foot, though. She could move it a foot without changing any kind of building.
Well, she's within 4 inches of a 5 foot. So,
okay.
I mean,
no, I think it is it 6 foot?
5 foot is the trigger.
Right, right. Trigger. So,
yes.
So she could go.
The 5 foot distance between the sidewall of the garage and the house triggers a requirement that side of the garage be made with non-combustible materials. If she is more than 5 feet away, then there is still some additional fireproofing that she needs to provide with regard to drywall inside and heat and alarm detection. But even with what she's proposing, that requirement still exists.
Okay.
So moving it closer than 5 feet to the house creates the more onerous requirement from a building code.
Right. So, but currently D1 is 6 feet, four inches.
Four inches.
Yes. I mean,
and a quarter.
We're you know, splitting
okay.
hairs here, I think, a little bit. So, I'm not quite sure, you know, from the findings of fact, what happened in terms of that discussion, but right now we're considering D1, which is 6 feet, 4 inches from her home.
And I guess if we do this right, we're supposed to go back and look at their findings of fact and figure out why they voted against this. And, you know, they said it didn't meet 1 and 3 and I think 8 because they're saying that she didn't meet the hardship.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, again, we talk about hardship all the time and how it could be subjective. It just seems that there's obviously a lot of drainage issues on the house. I know that has nothing to do with the variation request, but you're going to have to go through significant work with the village when you do come in for a grading permit and trying to figure out an existing solution to your problem in addition to the fact that you're going to be adding you know, a structure there that's going to probably aggravate some of that. And I know we're not supposed to talk about the tree, but from a design perspective, I mean, it seems like a straight driveway from the garage might, you know, help your neighbors. And that's just something that comes down the line for you. And there are 3 trees in the front, right? Because I took pictures. Well, I took pictures. There's like
there
a thin.
Two.
What's the thin little tree there?
Oh, the bush in front?
No, it's not a bush. It's actually a tree.
Oh, so that's coming out.
Okay. So there's three. There's three. Okay. So that's something for you to consider. Outside,
you might. Yeah, that's what I said. You might not want to make a U-turn into your garage. You might
and
to,
you know,
no,
because
it'll
then
be a straight.
Right. Well,
I mean, it'll be a relatively straight drive in. The tree has doesn't really affect.
Well, how close is the driveway edge going to be then to the property line? Because that's my question.
But Camille, you have to be careful because that is not.
It's not an issue.
Okay, well, need a variance for that?
No. The variation applies strictly to the structure of the garage.
Okay.
Yeah, it does not apply to the driveway.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's the thing that we very clear to work together and try to make that driveway work for both of you. But as far as we're concerned, it's the structure. So
I just have 2 comments.
Yep.
First of all, yes, I was a stalker in your backyard.
I was too.
I was with her though. So
I stalked the property.
Yeah.
I was with her. It was cool. Secondly, if you look at how our ordinances are written, they use the same terminology over and over again. And one of my favorite words is uniqueness. I would think that everybody here at this table would be hard-pressed to find a property that has 7 sides.
You wouldn't award.
Maureen
wins the award.
Yeah. So, I mean, so you gotta, she has to deal with that. And in D1, the drawing, for the sake of discussion, the dotted line that goes across the back of the crazy property line, the backyard literally drops down and is almost like a natural bowl that I'm sure is very water retentive friendly when it rains, right?
Couple feet.
And
the heavy rain.
You know, the village struggles fairly frequently with water retention issues and trying to keep water out of the sewer system to naturally percolate. And I'm sure the sustainability group could give his whole dissertation on the natural percolation of water versus the water reclamation district system handling that. So with that seven-sided property line and the desire to have nature handle the water, for lack of better words, I'm okay with this.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, any other further comments regarding the garage and D1?
I always say that in reviewing these things, I like to defer the committees because they put so much time and effort in. But in this case, I can actually articulate a reason why I disagree with zoning. I mean, as Mike said, this is unique, but there's a true hardship here. I mean, you're entitled to a garage. There is no other place to put it. I'm not sure if she did move it over a foot, even as suggested, that would ameliorate your concerns. But more importantly, I like trees. We should all like trees. And to just cut down a tree for the sake of 1 foot makes absolutely no sense to me. And so I agree with Mike. I think that this is one of those instances where this is truly a hardship. This is what the sort of the zoning code is intended to address, to give people an opportunity to deal with uniqueness that just doesn't work within the confines of the zoning board. So
To clarify, the 1 foot would actually not affect the tree. It would be 1 foot closer
to the house.
Yes.
Right.
But in terms of putting the garage further back, actually, Mr. Hand's mistaken. It doesn't eliminate a variation because we have a larger setback from that other fence, which is considered, you know, our setback is still, 9.5 feet or 14 feet?
14 feet 9. Combined.
9.5 feet. Yeah. There is no place we can put it. We can't put attached because it would eliminate all the southern windows and buildings that, you know, they don't want to do that for light and ventilation and whatever. So
Maureen, is there any further new information you want to give? Because I want the trustees to kind of talk.
No, I just
want
to clarify that the 1 foot wasn't
awesome.
Wasn't
good clarification. Right, it wasn't.
But to go back, you got to kill a tree.
Yeah.
Yes.
We would cut a tree and we would greatly impact the flooding, and it wouldn't eliminate a variation, and it would increase the impermeable surface on the property, further complicating flooding.
Yeah. Can I ask one quick question?
Yeah, sure.
So the current existing driveway that's like blacktop and it only goes like to the edge of your house. So once, and I know this has nothing to do with the variation, but it may have something to do with your grading.
Well, you would
eliminate that.
Lawn again.
Okay, so that would actually help some of your runoff. Hopefully, just at least saturating some of the water back into the ground.
I'd have more permeable surface.
Right. Okay. The one that's already existing.
Existing driveway.
Northeast corner.
Yeah, I think that's north.
Yeah.
The other side of the house.
Northeast.
Where she's parking her car right now. Okay, that was one of my questions.
Kind of like where? You want to add anything from Maureen?
I don't have any questions, but I do just want to.
I just want to make sure if any more further questions. I know, Kevin, you want to say something, but Maureen, maybe you can sit and then I'll call you. Do you have anything for Kevin?
Or? No, go ahead, but if you want to comment, then I'll wait.
Go ahead, Kevin. Yes, please take the podium. I just want to make sure the trustees got a chance to talk.
Certainly, and I appreciate the opportunity. With respect to what the board is talking about, Ms. Houston is talking about with a foot closer or to her home, I don't have an issue with that. I know that it's an added cost and the building versus zoning considerations with respect to fire retardant materials and the cost to go through the roof. I get that. I'm not objecting to that. And to be quite frank, I applaud Ms. Houston's effort to push it off of the property line. That isn't a variance that's under consideration today. It's that concern's been alleviated. I've really asked at the zoning board and in front of Ms. Houston is for the garage to be located further back into the buildable portion of the lot.
Right.
As Trustee Gibbs said, it is unique. It's a seven-sided lot. But that being said, Ms. Houston knew the dimensions of the lot when she first acquired the property some years ago. The depression in the property is a known factor, and I think Ms. Houston was a little mistaken. I don't think that pushing the garage back will eliminate the need for a variance. It certainly will, but it would locate the garage further back into the buildable one-third of the property lot, I think, which is countenanced by zoning. Ms. Houston has flooding issues. We have flooding issues. Everybody in that neck of the woods really has a water retention issue. And I know Ms. Houston's are worse than most because of that depression in the back of her lot. However, in terms of what those standards are for zoning and what they looked at is inconvenience versus hardship. Placing the garage where Ms. Houston plans under D1 here will do nothing to alleviate her water retention concerns as they currently stand, pardon the pun. So there would be some solution that Ms. Houston would have to find to deal with that, independent of the location of the garage.
Right.
Trustee Cargi, I'm with you. I don't want to cut down trees either. We've talked about this at the zoning board, and I think their recommendation or their comment was similar, which is we all love trees. We want to preserve as many as we can, but sometimes some of them have to go. And so my issue with the plan as it stands isn't the distance to the house. I don't want Ms. Houston to have to put the garage right next to her side door or to block up any windows. I'm just asking for it to go back. And it's not an issue of a foot. It's an issue of 6 to 8 feet.
Yeah.
It would still require a variation, but it wouldn't require as much. And just in closing, I want to thank this board. I want to thank the zoning board. I do have to say the zoning board has taken both A1, I think was the original submission, and D1 under consideration. We've had 3 meetings at the zoning board about this. They've gone through it in detail. The first time they took a look and they voted 6-1 against Ms. Houston's variation. Most recently they took a look at this very drawing and voted 5-2 against. My feeling is that the boards and commissions of this town are created for a reason, and they're empowered to look at situations and look at them in detail and make good recommendations.
Right.
So I'd urge this board to take that motion under consideration and follow the zoning board's recommendation.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. And let me just make some comments regarding that. And yes, we agree. We appreciate our commissions, and you could take a seat.
Oh, I didn't know.
They're important. But just so you're clear, the zoning board minutes and the audio is clear about not looking at moving that back. They were only looking at it it was presented, the D1. And in fact, if I remember, I think Commissioner Burney and others kind of talked about that during the audio, and it's clear in the minutes that would have been a hardship for Maureen. So I just want to make sure if you've got any doubt, re-listen to the audio and then read the minutes, and I think it would be clear that your suggestion they did look at, and it wasn't voted on, but it was discussed and not moved forward for discussion, because I think they looked at it as a more difficult. I'd suggest you go to the audio, and the minutes. So with that, now Patty, you had some questions?
Well, just a few thoughts on where we're at. We've all made it clear that we know that this property is unique and has a lot of drawbacks. And that would be so no matter who owned it, right? And if our code essentially is we would like properties to have a two-car garage, we're all in agreement on all. The commission, you even had mentioned at a meeting, everyone's in agreement that she should have a garage. And to do it without any variances that we also said is near impossible. I personally feel from what I've learned and read that Maureen really has done a lot in terms of trying to make it work and to be as accommodating as possible to her neighbors. And so I do feel this particular plan moves it over, acknowledges, you know, some of those concerns. And again, when we're just talking a foot, I feel like I'm not sure how much of a difference impact it's going to be to your house a foot farther away, which can be a bigger
impact. Okay, again, according to Kevin, that's
not
his issue.
I know, but that's why
so
I'm
this
saying...
So this is a very bizarre
that's
conversation.
That's why I'm saying I personally feel I support this plan, is that I feel like we've looked at every angle to make it the least...
Right. See, and I know, Kevin, if you read the findings of facts, too, and the minutes, that was not even in it. Recommendation was the moving it toward closer to the house, not back. So,
certainly. I think the zoning board's procedure, and I think this board's procedure, is you got to address the question as it's presented, right? So even if I had a third alternate wacky plan, they can't consider my suggestion. They have to consider...
Well, they would at least note it, I think.
Okay, yeah.
They would note it in their minutes that they discussed it, which they did, you know.
Can you point of order? I'm confused by the motion. Are we voting to accept or reject the recommendation, or
to pass an ordinance granting the request variation.
Should we,
so I think the motion is to grant.
We're not acknowledging the board's vote. We have our vote of our own.
And can we do that?
Yes, the village code provides that you may accept, reject, or modify the recommendation of the zoning board. And so you can take direct action on first motion to grant the variation. And in this case, because it did not receive a positive recommendation, four trustees have to vote in favor of it. It's two-thirds of the board of trustees, which is four of the six.
So that we're not voting.
Right. My question, because I read the language as accept or reject, I thought we'd have to act on that recommendation first and then grant the variation.
You can proceed straight to adopting an ordinance granting the variation, and the ordinance will reject by its terms the recommendation, if that's the action that's taken.
Okay. So any further questions?
No, just as a matter of process, I guess. Mm-hmm. Just going through the findings of fact, because the commission is saying that they have not met some of these. You know, I just want to, for the record, state that, you know, one, it just seems so convoluted that they're trying to make this. You know, I understand what they're trying to do, but, you know, had she known that this was going to happen when she bought the property, I mean, there's no way that you would have seen this coming,
so,
you know, when that happened. So I, you know, I think just keeping all these in mind, I know that the commission had to do their job and, you know, findings of fact, and whether they believe that they're met or not met, I guess I don't agree with some of those.
So, exactly. Right. I think the findings of facts are convoluted, and they're actually, you know, they're convoluted. Let's just keep it that way. So, any further?
I was just going to say that normally I'm a proponent of just going along with what the recommendations of whatever one of our commissions are, because I take that seriously and I know they work hard. So I just want to reiterate and thank them for the hard work. Mm-hmm. If anything, part of this helped me get through where we're at today in terms of that. So I just wanted to be clear on that. So. Despite what my vote will be, I want them to know that we appreciate their work.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. So I think we're ready to vote. And again, to be clear, this is to pass an ordinance granting the requested variation to Section 10-9-7 of the zoning ordinance at 631 Edgewood Place, or better known as D1. Please take the vote.
Trustee Corsini.
Yes.
Trustee Carji.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs.
Yes.
Okay, so D1 has been approved. So the next step for Maureen is to meet with your staff.
Yeah.
So she has an idea. So.
Right, so Cliff will reach out to you about getting contact with your architect, getting your construction drawings developed. We'll need a grading plan. All that kind of fun stuff comes next. And so we still have a little bit more work to do, but we'll get moving on it, and we'll have Cliff reach out to you.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck to all
of
you.
Good luck to you guys. All right. Moving on to boards and my appointments. So I've got some appointments and reappointments. If I can get a motion to approve my appointments by trustee and seconded, and I can discuss any one of these.
I'll make a motion to concur with the recommendation of the village president for appointments 7CI to 7CV for the boards and commissions appointments effective May 1st, 2018.
Right.
Second.
Thanks. If there's any particular question on any of these reappointments and appointments, I'll be happy to take them. I mean, they're all, you know, working hard at their roles, and we appreciate that they're doing it. There's just two other appointments you're probably going to see next month. I just couldn't get a hold of the two people in time, so I didn't want to wait till June. I thought we'd do this now and then take the other two that are up for reappointment next month. So,
what commissions are those?
Zoning and Historic Preservation.
In the future, can we get the information material on the applicant or on the people that are being proposed? Maybe not reappointed, but like the Joanna.
It was sent to you via email. It was sent, and that's part of the application. We have that. So, and then you sent it, right?
Right.
Okay. Any further questions on any of the members? Okay. Not hearing any. I'll ask the clerk to take the vote.
Trust. before the vote's taken, could the clerk please read the agenda item since it was done as a single motion on them? Yeah, thank you.
7C, right. Board and Commission Appointments, Reappointments. I, Development Review Board, Reappointment Marianne Fishman, Mike Rule, David Crosby, and Tagger O'Brien to a 2-year term expiring 4/30/2020. II, Plan Commission, reappoint Lisa Ryan, member and chairperson, and David Crosby to a 4-year term expiring 4/30/2022. Traffic and Safety Commission, reappoint Doug Reese, member and chairperson, and Arun Jayaraman, and appoint Johan Buis, all to a 4-year term ending 4/30/2022. For Board of Fire and Police Commission, reappoint John Phelan to a 3-year term expiring 4/30/2021. 5, Ethics Commission, reappoint Gary Collins, member and chairperson, and Maria Cullerton to a 3-year term expiring 4/30/2021.
If you take the vote.
Trustee Cargi?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Hennick?
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs?
Yes.
Trustee Corsini?
Yes. So we have no unfinished business. We'll move on to new business. And the next one up is a discussion. Because we're going to come back with it, right? So discussion on parking designation fees regarding the village-owned parking spaces.
Yes, everyone's favorite topic, parking. There's never enough of it. So what do you do with the existing parking spaces you have? So one of the, if you review my memo in the packet, we try to provide an overview of the different types of parking we have, right? So we've got daily parking for metro commuters. We've got monthly permit parking for metro commuters. We have 24-hour parking options, and then overnight parking. And obviously, we're talking about a finite amount of spaces, and typically in certain cases, not all cases, in certain cases, an increase in demand. What has further driven the demand and discussion is the apartment building over off of Thatcher, north of the East Thatcher lot, or the Depot lot, was recently acquired by Oak Park Apartments, and they, well, let me take a step back. The previous tenants typically were international students out of Dominican University, and very few of them did not have vehicles. So they did not require any 24-hour overnight parking. So now that that has changed, a lot of our new residents that are in Oak Park Apartments building do have cars and are asking for spaces. So we're essentially running out of spaces over in the Depot lot. And so we went back and decided to take a look at how could we potentially reallocate certain designations. One other thing to add to the mix in all this discussion that changed last year was that Metra, the daily lot, which is the West Thatcher lot, was previously under an intergovernmental agreement with Metra. So 20 years ago, Metra helped fund the improvements for that lot. I believe the community center used to be there. Is that right? Probably a long time.
Yes.
Upper Forest. Yeah. Okay. So that pot, so the lot was, then the property was acquired, and Metra helped fund those improvements. The requirement was it had to stay a daily lot for 20 years. So that expired back in September of 97. So now, or excuse me, September of 2017, a 20-year agreement. So now we have the ability to reallocate those designations as we see fit. So what I've proposed to you is kind of a three-step plan in terms of just not talking about the fees yet, but just talking about the designation. So what we would do in that West Thatcher lot is we would take that from daily commuter spaces, and we would make those monthly permits. So those would be permits for residents who want to park for Metro purposes. So essentially we're taking that lot and making it from daily to monthly. We would then add some spaces along Hawthorne for daily parking. And in addition to that, staff believes, at least at this time, there's enough inventory, even though we're losing several spaces of daily, the daily lots, the daily spots are not used to full capacity. So we believe we can add some additional inventory there and use the existing inventory. I think in a worst case scenario, if we find inventory is low, I think there's other places in the village, and I'm even thinking on Lake Street, the south side of Lake Street there, where you could do daily spots there potentially. They could park there and then they could vacate. They wouldn't park overnight. So there may be a couple other places in and around where we could add some spaces. And then the other reconfiguration really is in the East Thatcher lot. So we would take, dedicate 17 spaces for 24-hour parking. We would have 31 spaces for monthly permits and 15 spaces for overnight parking. So this would allow us to provide more dedicated parking for the apartment buildings and at the same time also kind of reset those monthly spaces. What had been happening over time is staff was selling more monthly commuter spaces instead of the 24-hour or overnight spaces because no one was using them. And so we get calls, hey, no one's using these spaces. How come we can't have it? So we were trying to reallocate that on our own on a staff level, which was fine. And then when the apartment folks started needing those spaces, there became a little bit of an imbalance as well. So this would allow us then to reset those numbers based more on where we are today. So I think before we get into fees, maybe we could just see if there's any feedback just on the spaces and kind of what the plan is and talk about that.
Can you use this map that you gave us? Is this what currently is in existence?
Yes.
So do you have an overlay of like your suggested changes?
The main overlay is zone 338.
Okay,
that's become blue.
That's going to be monthly.
Right.
Okay.
So right.
Right.
So blue becomes red.
And right. Then
and maybe a little bit more red in 340.
Right.
And then the parking along Hawthorne that you're going to extend, where would that go?
What I just talked about on 340, zone 340.
Oh, so
the res-
that way.
Right.
So, okay.
Going east
so
towards Franklin.
And you would make Lake parking a Lake Street permit?
That would be something I would come back to you with, but only for, not for overnight,
no,
just for daily.
Daily.
So
commuter
parking.
The
right.
Keystone lot is going to stay
permit.
Monthly.
It's going to stay permit, and there will be more of an allocation for 24-hour and overnight and less for monthly. So basically, we're going to take some of the monthly folks and push them over to the lot across the street.
So,
And I do want to point out, too, although a majority of the folks that use these spaces will reside in the apartment building, there are folks who live in the West Lake area who also use these spaces as well. So they're not exclusively for the apartment building.
So what happens if it's first come, first serve, and you need more?
For daily?
For these overnight and... for what your allocation on Keystone
great question.
Lot. I mean, what
I think
so your Keystone lot, you're
yeah.
kind of reallocating between overnight, monthly permit, and this new designation for these folks that live there. What happens
right.
if there's more demand than we have supply?
So, good question.
Good question. That's what
the answer is that so in the lot itself, the north row, there's 17 spaces there. So those become dedicated. 24-hour. Those are theirs. No one else can park there but the 24-hour folks. The 31 in the middle, those are the monthly Metra. And the whole idea behind the monthly Metra and the overnight is they kind of work together. So the overnight, and that's how it works now because there are still overnight people parking there, they have to get their cars out and sometimes put them back on the street because then the overnight parking restrictions lifted and then those become Metra spaces. And
so
then you have the bottom. I'm sorry. And then the bottom row is primarily park district use.
So I've got a couple questions.
Yeah. So there is going to have to be some enforcement on this.
It is, but that that does happen today.
Okay. So the park district though is not going to have an issue with. We're not removing any parking for them.
No.
Okay.
So I got two questions, but and kind of piggyback on yours, Carmela. But the one on I guess that's. Hawthorne,
mm-hmm.
Do I have this right, or maybe it's Central, that there could be, not that we want to go back to angle parking, but there could be additional parking you could add somewhere down the line, I think on, is it, could be Central, or could be Hawthorne? How many cars are on Hawthorne, in the blue?
Yeah, I could find out for you.
Right adjacent to, I mean, on Keystone Park on the other side.
You mean, could you do angle?
Uh-huh. Yeah, there's no room there.
One block work?
Yeah, there's, they're all parking spots from the curb to the end. Yeah. Yeah.
You're talking about
right here.
You're talking about the permit ones. Yeah.
There's no more space there.
20.
But I mean, there's
so
no more space to make
reconfigured it to a.
My only concern would be I'd have to look at the street. Well, the street width.
I don't think it's wide.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's. I mean, even the daily spots east. You know, those the spots that run along Hawthorne east of Keystone there. I mean, that gets a little tight. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just a thought. I don't
think. Same thing happens west of Gale.
Right.
Hawthorne gets tight.
Gets tight.
East of Gale, there's by the big house. Mm-hmm. Keystone.
It gets tight. Yeah.
And Hawthorne, it's really kind of wide right there, but then both sides going east and west, it kind of pinches.
Yeah.
You got to keep it parallel.
Yeah.
You can't do the diagonal.
So
I liked it.
I like being able to address overnight people's issues. I think what Oak Park has done, with all due respect to our neighbors to the east, when I was a kid, bottom line was nobody's allowed to park on the street. Here's your apartment building if you don't have parking. We've never gone that way in River Forest, but I don't think it's a bad thing for the village to, for lack of better words, be a team player with residential ownership with the apartment buildings. It makes the town more desirable to have nice apartments that have parking options. Doesn't do the village any good to have nice apartments that no one's going to move into because there's no parking. We just spent a half hour talking about a neighbor of ours that wants to build a garage because the village promotes parking. So along those same lines, I think we're solving a problem, and we don't have a metro agreement that we have to deal with anymore. We didn't have this option before. And so anyway, that's my two cents.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's a great idea. It helps Bill and you know, out tremendously. I mean, you're right. The last thing we wanted to do is put cars on streets, but this is not even a compromise. It's a great solution.
Well, I think it's best use of a municipal parking lot.
I do too.
If we're using it for 9 hours or using it for 24 hours. Yeah. 24 hours is a better use.
Can you go back one second to the zone 339? That's the diagonal parking, right?
Correct, by Keystone Park.
So that is going to remain
daily.
Just daily fee?
Yes.
Would you ever consider doing overnight and then moving those cars if we needed to? You know what I'm saying? So they can only park between the hours of, you know, 10 and 6 a.m. or something, or 10 and 5. And I mean, if we needed to, you can, instead of putting parking on Lake Street, I'm not sure I'm, you know, really keen on that.
Here's what I'd say to all of you, and Eric and I chatted about it. I mean, before we go to that, and I agree, Carmela, I think we should think about parking in general for that area. I mean, right now we're trying to, you know, solve a solution, which I think is a great solution, and trying to maneuver our way through this. But there might be a better solution eventually down the road. I mean, I'm going to throw it out, and maybe at some time we'll talk through it. But you can actually put another level on this. I mean, there's no reason we couldn't put another, you know, level to this parking structure, right? I mean, not make it, I'm not talking about huge or, you know,
ugly. The 338 lot.
The 338 lot, eventually. So, I mean, there are businesses that are right there, right next to it, and they would love parking for their businesses. And, you know, and they're not getting it. I mean, so there's a need there. And I'm not saying we solve it today because we've got, you know, solutions we have to find today. But I think we talk about it. I don't know what it would cost to do a study, but I can't imagine it would be a lot to consider putting a, you know, one level structure on that, making it, you know, kind of, you know, you've seen OPRFs, you know, not that
like the West Suburban one.
Oh, the West Suburban one.
We like to use that as a model.
Yeah.
Nice one.
That's a great example. You can make it look like a building and it's a parking lot. It's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's the thought for long term. But so you're right, instead of, you know, trying to.
Well, I'm saying you could repurpose some of those that, you know, you have as daily parking for overnight somehow. I don't know how you would do it, but. If the need is greater than what what we have an opportunity for right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping with adding the more dedicated 24-hour spaces, adding the overnight that works in concert with the permits, and not doing it one for one, but giving some breathing room there, kind of half, I think it was the designation-ish, then I think that helps the apartment and the Westlake folks out a lot. It's going to help the permit folks out. That's going to reset that, give us a couple extra spaces there. I think if I had to say if there was one weakness, if you want to call it that, would be the daily, and just keeping an eye on that to make sure. So I don't want to give the impression that, I mean, I believe we have enough capacity, but that's the area where I have to keep a close eye on. And yeah, so I may be coming back to you at some point saying, well, you know, here's the issue and here's how we're going to try to solve it.
We don't want to shortchange the daily parkers that have been using those areas for a long time.
True. And so the interesting part about the daily parkers are that they're probably on average half residents, half non-residents. And so that always presents an interesting question, right? So people are like, well, we don't want, you know, we want it to be focused on residents, which is important. That's why we've always provided the monthly permit to provide that dedicated space. At the same time, when non-residents come in, they're also utilizing the enterprise, right, the parking fund. So they're also contributing to that, which we help use in our general fund and then in our parking allocation in the CIF.
Good segue to fees.
Yes.
Yeah. Show me the money.
Show me the money.
No,
well,
but
anyway.
Seriously, I have a question about, I know this is kind of strange, but why didn't we look at this during our budget conversations?
Oh, about the...
Just the, you know,
well,
changing the fee structure.
For God's sake.
Yeah. I know, it's kind of, you know, we're...
Timing is everything. I understand that. It was important to, and fees are certainly a part of it. The other thing that always concerns me is about budgeting on, and we did this last time. If you recall, when we adjusted the rates, when we did the Park Mobile, we didn't really anticipate any more revenue at that time because we didn't know how the market was going to respond to the increases. So the last thing I want to do is say, well, I'm, you know, predicting X amount of revenue and then something happens, right? So the parking revenue that's in the fund, I'm very comfortable that we're going to hit that revenue mark. Anything else that comes in after that, right, we'll plan it for next year.
Right. Fair enough.
So what do we need to move forward? You guys are going to drop an ordinance, bring back to us?
Right. So
that's what you
Yeah, so well, once we get through the, so I guess the first question we had, is there any other concerns about the plan?
About the plan, yeah. Doesn't sound like it.
Okay.
So he'll bring a plan. Now, I also wanted, like I said, I laid it out. I'd like you guys to think about a bigger plan, not, you know, for parking over there. I mean, this is a good plan for now, but as we, again, there's businesses there that would like to have more parking. So I'll leave it open. You know, you can talk to Eric about it, but I'd like to consider thinking of looking at something that might be a more permanent solution for everybody. Okay, so let's move on to...
Okay. And then so fees. So we haven't adjusted the fee since 2014, and we have really four fees. We've got the Metro commuter parking fee. We've got the monthly Metro commuter permit parking, which is for residents. We have our overnight parking fee and our 24-hour parking fee. Now, in the packet, you have a schedule from Oak Park. We didn't do a very in-depth survey this time. We used Oak Park primarily because we know they're the leaders, if you will. They set the market for a lot of the parking rates and certainly have a very robust parking fund. If you look at that rate schedule, you can understand why they have a department head that just strictly deals with parking and mobility issues. It's a it's a challenging it's a lot of spaces and a lot of lots and a lot of stuff. Anyhow, so what I'm recommending, staff is recommending, is that we'll increase the daily Metro commuter parking from 250 to 3, the monthly Metro commuter parking from 35 to 45, overnight from 45 to 55, and 24-hour parking from 75 to 100. I understand it is a larger increase on the 24-hour parking side. My argument back to you would be is certainly even just from a supply and demand perspective, there is a greater demand here for these, and I think to dedicate spaces, which we will for those 17 on the north half of that lot, and put signs up and say these are only for these people, I think there's a premium for that, and to get that, especially in River Forest. So I'm comfortable with making that recommendation. So if there aren't any concerns with that, then we would have to update the ordinance and bring that to the table. The other component too is folks that have purchased their monthly permits typically do so in advance up to 6 months or a year. Up to a year. So certainly we don't go back and ask for that increase, right? That's the benefit. If you prepay, you lock in for whatever that rate is. So getting back to the budget question, sometimes that we won't be able to see that revenue on the monthly permit side for a while.
I actually thought comparing Oak Park to what you proposed were somewhat modest.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know about commuters. I mean, my sense the lot is the parking is, daily parking is about 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to burden the residents, but we're a bargain compared to Oak Park. Oak Park now is everywhere along the train track is $8 a day. It's $1 an hour, I should say.
Right.
So it's a bargain. Now, admittedly, you're only looking at Metro commuters as opposed to both CTA and Metro, but I think that there's room for more movement on all of the parking scales based on just looking at Oak Park. I mean, I think it's a valid comparator.
Mm-hmm.
We're cheap.
Yeah.
Oak Park also has an army of meter maids they have to pay for.
True.
Can I ask, can you go over how the parking, the mobile parking, like, are we recouping the rate, the fees that were charged on that in this rate or not? Can you just kind of go over the...
We are.
So what is the rate for fees charged for
well,
that?
Well, it depends. You know, if they use a credit card or a debit card, we have to pay the credit card fees, and then they charge, I think, 25 cents or something.
I want to say it was around 40 or 50 cents a transaction.
And
we're paying.
Oh.
Right.
So are we absorbing that? In,
yeah, that's, yes, in we are absorbing that. Right,
so
correct.
Then this seems like the low end.
Right. So for 250, if we charge 250, we're getting around, I have to double check this, but like around $2.
So shouldn't we incorporate that?
Why don't we
Well, we did when we
we're going up to 3.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it used to be 150. That's why
okay.
we raised it to 250 to roll.
Right.
Make it easier for everybody to park.
I mean, here, what I'm hearing is that we may not have need some further analysis on what these rates are. So if that's what I'm hearing, we can go back
hearing.
And
yeah.
we'll bring it.
Yeah,
at least my hearing is still good. My budgeting may be off.
Dominican
At
the Priory, they allow people to do overnight parking there, and they charge $140 for 3 months for overnight parking. So that's about $47 a month.
Right.
So.
And that's just for overnight.
That's just for overnight. So I was just looking at our, you know, it's in the range, but it's not even near a commuter, you know, a commuter lot.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
That's just to make it convenient
sure.
for the folks that live in that apartment buildings across the street. So
yep.
I think you can.
Where's this again?
Probably. So the Priory,
oh,
they
right
rent
there.
Some of their spaces
oh.
along
off
that
of division
Fenway
there.
Field
oh, right.
Mm-hmm. for people that live
right.
across the street that don't have
oh,
garages to park in. So I think you have some room to
okay.
look at that and sort of
right.
make sure we're recouping our
yeah.
the fees that we're paying for the meters.
Okay.
That was just one of my thoughts.
Okay. Yeah, good points. Edmund's making some good points. All right, so looks like the plan looks good. Maybe
mm-hmm.
the rates need to be worked on, but next...
Yep, first meeting in June.
We'll have both those out
yep.
for approval.
Okay. Yes.
Okay, Bill? All right, sounds good. So we'll move on to the next discussion, which is the our ability to regulate items regarding trains. Not automobiles, but trains. So our village attorney did a nice job of kind of framing our discussion in terms of what we probably should concentrate on, given that it's almost impossible to regulate their operations because of preemptive law. But we do have some, I guess, small ways we could do. We can work with them in terms of idling and noise reduction, but primarily, I think our largest ability is to work with them on maintenance. And so, unless Greg, you want to give a little bit more of a discussion
yeah.
on your letter.
Thank you. That was a great introduction. There are two train lines that are within the village. There are railroad companies which own those rail lines, and they are property owners that are subject to your property maintenance codes, simply put. Because railroads operate in thousands, if not tens of thousands of jurisdictions, for the rail carriers who cross state lines especially, they have federal laws that they wrote. They have kind of the original lobby in Washington, D.C., that preempt them from local control with respect to their operations. If you are Union Pacific and you're running freight from Chicago out west, you're going to have trouble if you need to follow 10,000 different speed limits every time you cross a jurisdictional boundary. So federal law says that local governments cannot insert themselves into the operations of railroads with very narrow restrictions or exceptions, rather, that aren't at issue here for the village. So the village does have the authority, however, and there are courts that have held this, and unsurprisingly, there's been a lot of litigation filed by railroads against the government saying that you can't tell me what to do with my property, and the courts have coalesced around this idea that as property owners, the railroads still have to maintain their property. They can't keep garbage and debris on it, for instance, because that has no direct tie to their railroad operations. For instance, there's a case where a railroad dumped a bunch of old ties and other garbage in a creek that abutted their property and caused flooding to an adjacent property. The railroads tried to say, well, you can't enforce your drainage code against us. It's preempted. It has to do with our operations. And the court, thankfully, said, no, that's a traditional police power. You have to keep your property clean. So maintenance codes can be enforced. So when the village encounters problems with railroad property where there is a lack of maintenance in terms of garbage and debris and so on, the village would likely first try to get voluntary compliance like it would with any property owner, and then if that doesn't work, you move to the next level, which would be a more formal code enforcement effort, which could lead to ordinance citations being issued either here in administrative adjudication, where you have a judge come in once a month on first Mondays, or in the circuit court. So the village does have authority, as outlined in my memo, to enforce its property maintenance requirements so long as they don't infringe on the railroad's operations. So you can't tell a railroad, how fast they're traveling. You can't tell a railroad not to block crossings for longer than a certain time. That you have to go to a federal forum to do those things. And there is a federal body, the Surface Transportation Board, and the Federal Railroad Administration, who have jurisdiction over those places. But at a local level, you can hold them to account. River Forest has a high property maintenance standard, obviously, for all of its owners, and you can hold the railroads to that standard as well.
So the ordinance that we supposedly passed 20 years ago or so regarding speed was kind of put on a...
There's a line of cases that suggest that speed limits are not enforceable, although they may be on the books. There's many federal courts which have said that is within the jurisdiction of the federal agencies and not on a case-by-case basis, because there's no practical way for the railroads to speed up and slow down their trains while they're in each jurisdiction that may attempt to enforce a speed limit against it.
What about those, North Riverside has a limitation on the use of the horns over intersections.
Right, and there are carve-outs for noise-related matters. There is, in fact, a whole federal law called the Railroad Noise Control Act, which has standards, and there is a process where you can impose restrictions on that. And the village here has worked a lot with Union Pacific on their idling. While they're working on their tracks in their rail yard further west of here, and Union Pacific has paid tens of thousands of dollars to the villages for fines on an agreed basis, recognizing that they haven't been a great neighbor at times with regard to train idling.
Has anyone noticed an increase in train whistles during the night? And I don't know if it's coming from Elmwood Park or coming from here.
I think it was the construction zone on First Avenue.
No, it's overnight.
It's overnight.
So
there's
been a big increase in overnight train whistles. So I don't know if that's something we can address.
It's related to that. So there's rules when there's construction area.
Even at night? At night time? Okay.
Well, we'll find out.
Now it's moved to 9th Avenue, so it's not out of the neighborhood yet.
Well, perk your ears up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
You'll hear them, I can't figure out which direction they're coming from.
Yeah,
but
I can't either, but they're there.
Because there was a train whistle ban in Elmwood Park for years, but I don't know if that's expired. Right.
Okay. So the reason this came up now, and maybe just give a refresher to all of us, because we've got some new board members to understand what what we do have in our power, is that we do have some issues on the, along Lake Street area that Eric is working on. Again, it's a matter of how much, from the residents' point of view, we got to fix their issues. And so, I think Eric is working with UP. I think from my viewpoint, I hope you guys all agree, we'd like, as a board member, I would like to make sure we fix their problem. I mean, right. UP owes them, you know, some action to clean up the property. And so whatever we need to do within our legal rights, as well as our good neighborly rights, we should impose that. Unless I hear something different, we should impose that immediately. Because it's long overdue, it sounds like.
Yeah,
unless you guys say something else.
To this point, were they required to give us more sufficient notice and give the neighbors more sufficient notice about the construction? And the traffic problems as well that they caused?
I'm not sure what requirements there may be that would apply to their construction that would require notice to be given.
But there's no permitting from the village, so we have no authority from that perspective.
My understanding is that the village was not involved in the permitting on this, and if they're operating within their right-of-way, I don't believe that they've conducted any takings, for instance, to expand to three tracks, that they're doing it within their boundaries. They may not have a requirement under federal or state law to give notice to the adjacent entities. I believe that the federal agencies are the ones with primary jurisdiction over the construction of these improvements. The state of Illinois has jurisdiction over rail crossings, but within River Forest, there's no rail crossings, obviously, on the UP track. If they didn't give notice to the neighbors, that's a good suggestion to them. They should be talking to the people who are adjacent.
I mean, even, and it, because I'm sure there's a communication that's come out from UP, but I think the real issue isn't just communication, if you really talk to those neighbors. It's just about how poorly, sloppy,
right,
if you will.
Right.
And so, I mean, it's nice to communicate, but it's even nicer to clean up. And I think that's, if you really talk with them, that's their real issue. So, and I think it appears that UP says, well, we communicate. Well, that's not good enough. You just can't communicate. You have to also make sure that you're a good neighbor and clean up.
So in the one letter, the resident said he also had concerns in terms of landscaping or fencing.
Yep.
And
right. Yep, same thing.
Is that even anything, though, that we can, I mean, obviously cleaning up the site and debris on tracks, that sort of thing, but it's not like we can, you enforce that they have to do this?
Well, and that's where
we other as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Union Pacific has always said they want to be a good neighbor, right? And so we're going to take them on their word until we don't have that anymore, and that's what we're going to work with the UP and the neighbors to sit down and come up with a plan that everyone can get behind. And so, on a moving forward basis, I don't believe on that rail line that the Westlake area is somewhat unique in that there's not a lot of residential homes that abut the train line. So the situation itself, even for Union Pacific, is a little unique, and they've agreed to sit down, have a meeting, and try to address all these issues. And in terms of the communication perspective, I think the village always can do a better job, and I think here's an instance where we could have gotten word out to the neighbors about what was going on in better fashion, and we acknowledge that. The detour was not something we were aware of and learned about all at the same time that you did, and I have expressed my concern about that to UP. I think part of the oversight was because, again, the detour wasn't necessarily a detour in River Forest. It was supposed to be around us or through us, but then, as we talk about unintended consequences, about everything else, and so I've already shared my frustration with the folks at UP, and they understand that and recognize that.
So who sets the detour route then?
In that particular instance, UP, the applicant's Union Pacific, but then it's approved by IDOT.
They're not on the state of Illinois roads.
First Avenue.
Well, driving by it every day, I don't think anybody set a detour because there wasn't a single sign that said turn this way or this way. It just said road closed.
Yeah, there was no detours.
If you were going north on First Avenue at Washington Boulevard, there were two barricades that simply said road closed. It didn't tell you to go to Fifth Avenue. It didn't tell you to go to Thatcher.
Right.
So the people going northbound, it's easier to make a right turn than it is to make a left turn. If they did do a detour and sent everything to Fifth Avenue, they would have kept all of the First Avenue traffic all on Fifth, and it would have been a lot less complicated.
But the detour plan was late to Harlem and to Washington.
Well, it might have been. What Mike is saying is there's no signage.
That was, if anything, that was our doing.
Yeah.
They didn't do anything. Right. They just closed the road.
In fact, the neighbors, Jim knows this because the neighbors were calling, you know, for safety reasons. I mean, people were speeding through. And
it would have been way simpler to just throw everybody to Fifth in both directions.
It was so
and then you're making the right turn back to get to First.
No, that's right. There's detours approved by IDOT with only IDOT roads.
Yeah. That would make some sense.
And I think it was Madison, Harlem.
Oh, it was Madison, not Washington.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Now, obviously, that's not what the drivers did, and it was
a small detail. Right. We got
and the Eisenhower had big blinky lights that said First Avenue closed at Main Street.
Where's that?
What's Main Street? Main Street is the frontage road behind the Walgreens.
Well, it sounds good, though, Mike.
Instead of just saying North Avenue, First Avenue closed at the tracks, it said Main Street, so that meant nothing to people that have lived here their whole lives.
The garbage issue is not just along that residential. I mean,
if
you take the train in and you cross over, there's garbage all over that track, and it's just so unattractive. I mean, that's the gate, you know, the train gateway into our community, and it just looks terrible.
Well, there's several issues. I mean, there's, you know, the issues that we just talked about in terms of communication and, you know, UP being a better, you know, communicator to us and we to our residents. We've talked about, you know, cleanliness and, you know, especially in light of all the construction that's going on. And then I put a third item on just general maintenance of their operation.
Their bridges.
I mean, excuse me, of their bridges and their, you know, they're slowly taking care of them, but they're slowly taking care of them. I can't imagine why we can't accelerate some of this this work. I mean, it's been years, and we still have, you know, walls crumbling. It's like, it's like we're in some other country. It's crazy. So that's why I would look at it.
It took them 6 months to patch that one wall at Franklin and the tracks.
That's insane. So I see those are three issues that I see that I'd like to get some action. And I know you're meeting, so maybe at our next board meeting or board after, if we can have, you know, these are the action items and the commitments that UP's made.
Sure.
And if they don't commit to it, then we take our next approach by whatever. I'll leave that up to our next approach. All right, going on to item 9C. Motion. I'll make sure we get it. Yep, there's a motion here. Yeah, this is the IGA. Okay. So if I can get a trustee to move and second 9.
Motion to approve an intergovernmental agreement between the Village, River Forest Public School District 90, Oak Park River Forest High School District 200, regarding the River Forest Madison Street TIF Tax Increment Financing District and the proposed River Forest North Avenue Tax Increment Financing District.
Second.
Okay.
And for the reasons stated earlier, I'm going to ask, I'm going to recuse myself and ask the clerk not to call my name during the vote.
Okay. All right. So I guess Eric's memo was pretty self-explanatory. This is something we've been working on for a couple of years. Why, I don't know. But I think we've got it to a point where it makes sense for both us, 290. And it's something we've done in the past, so it's not new.
Right, and D90 has approved this at their meeting, and D200 will be reviewing this at a meeting in June.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions regarding it? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and ask the clerk to please take the vote.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs.
Yes.
Trustee Corsini.
Yes.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Great. Super. Now on to summer schedule.
Yes, so we've polled all of you about your summer plans. Good news, none of you are all taking vacations at the same time, so that should not affect our abilities to get quorums. Typically what we will try to do is load everything to the first meeting of the month, so first meeting in June, first meeting in July and August, etc. However, it is going to be a busy summer for our development standpoint, so the DRB on their plate. They have coming up on June 21st, Concordia University has two plan development amendments, one for their cell tower that they had come back to you with some time ago, and a lot of back and forth with Verizon, but they're finally ready to go forward. And then they're doing a what we're calling like a connecting link between two buildings, so they have to build like an they want to build an enclosed walkway. They have a donor that has stepped up to pay for that, so that technically requires PD, although it's a major PD, but probably on the minor side of the major PDs, right? So that's coming forward, and then you've got Chicago and Harlem, and then you've also got Lake and Lathrop. And so you have three major projects in the queue, and so we just want to put the board on notice that we may trigger a second meeting depending on how quickly we can get through these development public hearings and applications. They may come back to you at some point for. So I'm not the point being, we're not canceling anything yet. If we don't have something to consider, we can cancel a meeting, but I'm keeping everything kind of live at this point.
So there's upside, meaning,
I know you June 11th, I have to be up in school orientation with my daughter.
Yeah. Okay.
What was the TIF, the important TIF meeting?
July 9th.
July 9th is
Monday,
so that's a regular.
Yes. So that one's important.
Yep.
Let's see. Yeah, July 9th. Yeah, and, you know, there's going to be times for something like that's going to happen, Tom. But so I thought if we just keep them all, and when we cancel it, that's a free day. We thought we'd take
it's a
fun day. It's always nice to keep positive.
Yes, exactly.
All right. So, okay, then we are going to, I think that ends our regular agenda, so we'll go into executive
move to adjourn into executive session for the purposes of appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the village.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No opposition. We'll go into executive session. Okay, so we now. We gotta go into open session.
Roll call. Great. Trustee Corsini.
Here.
Trustee Cargi.
Here.
Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee County. Trustee Hennick.
Here.
Trustee Gibbs.
Here.
President Adducci.
Here.
Oh,
any issues?
Do you want to talk about this ethics ordinance?
Just sign it.
Yeah, no, that's just a periodic update that we do to make sure that we have some updated forms that are of recent signatures. So at your leisure, review that and sign it. Give it back to me and put it on file.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.